Nick DiGilio here. How you doing, everybody? We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trip Tower. Here till 5, as we are every weekday morning. Sundance Film Festival is happening right now. Eric Childress, who reviews movies for us on Monday morning along with Colin Suter, he does a lot of traveling every year to a lot of the film festivals, and he is in Sundance right now. He's at Sundance right now and always files exclusive live reports from those film festivals. And he sees a ton of movies while he travels around going to the film festivals, South by Southwest, Toronto, Sundance, all of those. And then files reports for us. And he's about to do that right now live from Sundance. So let's welcome Eric Childress to the show. Hi, Eric.
Hey, man. How's it going?
All right. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
All right. Now, how long have you been there?
I've been here since last Thursday. Can't believe it's Wednesday already.
So almost a week.
Yes.
And how long are you going to be there?
I am leaving later this day.
Oh,
later this afternoon.
Okay, all right. So, how many more movies are you going to see before you leave?
Two more.
What are those two? You looking forward to them?
Yeah. Well, one of them, I'm definitely looking forward to is one called The Nightmare, and it's directed by Rodney Asher, who the documentarian who did Room 237.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and this actually is a documentary about nightmares.
Oh, cool.
So. Yeah, so that looks very promising. Okay. I hear very good things about it, too.
All right, cool. How many movies have you seen thus far?
I'm trying to look at my list here, and I think I'm definitely at 25.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So, in less than a week, you will have seen 27 movies.
Correct.
I don't know. I swear, man, I don't know how you do it. I swear to God, I don't.
Just rugged training and discipline.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's dive right into it then. You've seen 25 movies. Pick which ones you want to tell us about and give us a report. Let's start out.
Well, we might as well start right at the top. My favorite film of the festival is one that everyone is going to probably get to see sometime this year, because Fox Searchlight paid one of the bigger deals of the festival so far for it, and it's called Me and Earl and the Dying Girl.
Yeah, Molly Shannon's in this.
Yes, Molly Shannon is in it. It's a pretty good cast. The leaders of the film, Thomas Mann, who's been in a number of teenage comedies. Olivia Cooke has been in some bad horror films lately, but is also on Bates Motel. Connie Britton, Nick Offerman, Molly Shannon, as you mentioned. So it has a very solid cast. But the movie is strictly about these kids, and Thomas Mann plays a kid in high school who sort of made himself sort of invisible to his classmates in a way. He doesn't want to, you know, get in any scrapes. He just wants to just coast through high school. He's got very low self-esteem and just get through it with a minimal amount of fuss. Well, one day during his senior year, his mom asks him, finds out that one of his classmates has been diagnosed with leukemia, and she sort of pushes him to hang out with her, befriend her. Just, you know, she lives up the street. They've known each other for a while, even though they haven't really been friends. And this sort of forced friendship that develops between the two of them takes place then over the course of the school year. This really sort of really touching, really beautiful, funny friendship that also involves the main kid who has, throughout his high school life, has been making films, amateur films, with his friend Earl, a black kid from up the street. And they sort of do like Be Kind Rewind versions of actual movies and just sort of switch the titles around a little bit.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even dream of spoiling any of that stuff, because that stuff is just kind of gold throughout the movie. But this movie really, man, did this movie strike a chord here at Sundance. The premiere of the film in the afternoon a couple days ago went over like gangbusters. Then the press and industry screening that where I was at, everyone was bawling their eyes out at this thing. And by, I think, midnight or sometime overnight, the deal was struck by Fox Searchlight. So this is a really, really special movie. Very funny. It's right in there. You know, Fox Searchlight has a history of picking up movies like this at Sundance, 500 Days of Summer, Little Miss Sunshine. You know, they have a knack for these sort of crowd pleasers. And even though Fox put out Fault in Our Stars, which a lot of people are sort of comparing this movie to, this movie trumps that by just a million times. It is just a wonderful movie that a lot of people are going to get behind.
Okay, Me and Earl and the Dying Girl.
Yes.
All right, great. That's great. All right, nice way to start off. Okay, what's next?
Okay, well, here's my second favorite film of the festival that I just saw just yesterday. Tell me, stop me when you've heard this before. Bobcat Goldthwait has made a great movie.
I've heard that about five times.
Yeah.
Because I think he's made five movies?
Five, six or seven.
Okay.
I think, actually. but this one, now he's branched into documentaries. Okay. And it's a documentary called Call Me Lucky.
Call Me Lucky.
Call Me Lucky. And, oh my God, I'm hope I'm not blanking on the comedian's name, because it's a documentary about a comedian that Bobcat has known for a long time. I think his name, kill me if I get this wrong, Brian Crimmins?
Barry Crimmins.
Barry Crimmins.
Yes.
There you go. Thank you very much. I've only been typing his name all day out here. But yes, Barry Crimmins, who I remember a lot from the, sort of the HBO comedy shows back in the 80s when I was watching those. That's where I remember this guy. But I never seemed to know what happened to him after that. And this documentary takes us on this journey, is what happened to this guy and how he sort of became he was sort of Bill Hicks before Bill Hicks really sort of blew up.
Okay.
And sort of became that sort of that really, you know, high energy politicized comedian. This guy was doing that kind of before Bill Hicks, and you know, part of that sort of, you know, kept him, you know, from being, you know, one of the bigger name comedians. And he ended up sort of trumping that aspect into becoming an activist for other, you know, political causes. He spoke out against Reagan and all these other things. And then there's aspects to his story that, although it's out there, clearly, I would really not want to spoil for anyone who is not does not know much about this guy, because this movie takes you on a journey that is both incredibly funny and will sort of leave you shaken by the end of the film. I don't know. Do you know much about this guy's history?
Just a little bit, but not much. I know there was a time when he was pretty popular, and then like felt like it almost seemingly in my world fell off.
Right, right. Well, it's amazing that he's really been out there, and he's just been sort of under the radar. I mean, making waves before the internet. You know, if he was doing this stuff when the internet, you know, was happening, he would have, you know, everyone would know who this guy was.
Yeah, gotcha.
But he wasn't. It was just sort of the wrong time. And I'm telling you, man, the movie received a double standing ovation at the screening today, one for Bobcat and one for Barry Crimmins after he showed up. It is such a remarkable piece of work from Bobcat. It is just amazing what this guy has become. As he said at the press screening, he said, "The career I've had has been sort of backwards. I did the sellout stuff at the beginning of my career, and now I'm getting to do the stuff that I want to do."
Well, you know, it is kind of remarkable the route that Bob Goldthwait's career has taken. You know, I mean, if you would have told me back during the Police Academy days that in years from now, Bobcat Goldthwait's going to be like one of the best filmmakers, you know, especially black comedy filmmakers around, I would have said, shut up, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's great to hear.
This is a film he was actually trying to get made as a narrative. And he actually, not too long before he died, Robin Williams actually told him to do it as a documentary. Mm. And the film is actually dedicated to Robin Williams.
Oh, wow.
So there was sort of a kind of a tearful admission at the beginning of the screening this afternoon.
Well,
but
I mean, they were really close, Robin Williams and Bob Goldthwait. They were really
absolutely
close,
yeah. Absolutely.
And he coaxed, in my opinion, Bobcat Goldthwait coaxed the best Robin Williams performance of all time.
Right.
In World's Greatest Dad. I mean, it's remarkable performance.
Yeah, you're going to love this thing, man. I mean, not just because of the Bobcat connection that you know this guy can pull off a movie, but it's a great film about comedy and the art of comedy. And then the activist stuff that this guy got into will knock you on your ass. Seriously.
Well, you know, I'm looking at the cast list, and like, you know, there's no lack of amazing comedians in this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everybody is in this thing. So, okay, it's called Call Me Lucky. Did it get picked up?
Not yet. The first screening was today, so I'm hoping that someone's going to grab this thing.
Well,
it's a documentary, so those aren't the first ones to go usually. Yeah. So,
but when a movie gets a double standing ovation, and if there's there are movers and shakers in that screening room where it's getting a double standing ovation, you got to figure this thing is going to get picked up at some point.
Yeah, and I'm hoping. I mean, if the film is actually it's in competition, we'll see who wins on Saturday. But I would really just love to see Bobcat. It's his third movie here at Sundance. Again, whoever thought we'd be saying that after Police Academy 2.
Yeah.
But it's his third movie at Sundance. I really hope to see that he wins.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, good for him. Mm-hmm. Good for him. Man, I'm branching out too now, doing documentaries, man. All right, what a career this guy has had. Incredible.
Seriously.
Yeah. All right, listen, Eric, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right. Eric Childress is with us. He is at the Sundance Film Festival and always provides reports with us. He's live there right now, and he's going to tell us about tons of other movies that he's seen. And a lot of these movies we will get a chance to see, so we're getting a preview here. This is going to be in the coming weeks and the coming months, so we're getting a preview here of the kind of stuff that that we're going to see coming out of Sundance. All right, we'll take a quick break. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we are here till 5 a.m. Eric Childress, who reviews movies for us, also for eFilmCritic.com. Roger, he writes also for RogerEbert.com. He reviews movies with us and Colin Suter on Monday mornings every week, and he travels around, goes to a lot of the film festivals, and we get exclusive and live reports from those film festivals. Currently, in Park City, Utah, at the Sundance Film Festival, Eric has seen over 25 movies. And we welcome Eric back to the show. All right, Eric, let's continue, shall we?
Okay. Right. Well, bringing it home to Chicago, at least, we had not one but two films by the prolific Swanberg family from Chicago.
Yeah.
Both Joe Swanberg and his wife, Chris Swanberg, both individually had their own movies here at Sundance, and I'm happy to report that both of them are pretty good.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Chris's film is called Unexpected. It stars Colby Smulders as a Chicago teacher who discovers that she's pregnant with her boyfriend at the time, played by, I think his name is Anders Howe. I think he's on Workaholics. They discover that they're pregnant, an unexpected pregnancy. And then she discovers that one of her students, like her sort of her top student in school, finds out that she's also pregnant as well. So the movie is sort of this back and forth is the sort of the relationship that they have as they both sort of going through the sort of the economic downfalls, if you will, of having a child when you're not expecting it. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice little story. Colby Smulders actually had a couple performances in here that really is sort of putting her into the next phase of her career, I think. And this is nice. It's really nice work. It's a Chicago story.
Tell you, I'm now freaking out.
Why is that?
Because I'm looking at the cast list, and Robin Coffin is in this movie, and I directed her in Black and Blue.
What?
She plays a character named Melanie?
Melanie.
Melaine?
Melaine?
She's got blonde hair.
Okay.
Her character's name is spelled Melaine.
Hmm.
So it's
I'm trying to remember who that was.
They're listed alphabetically, so she might not have a gigantic role in it. But
okay.
But she's in it, and I directed her in Black and Blue, and it was just
I'm wondering if she plays someone who at the University of Illinois. There's a scene that's the only blonde woman I can remember in the movie.
Yeah,
actually. So, but there you go.
All right.
So there's that, and then Chris's husband Joe.
Yeah.
He
directs 15 movies a year.
Yeah, he's made three just this week at Sundance. So the guy's obviously he cranks stuff out all the time, and he usually does so with the benefit of just having sort of an outline of a script, sort of very Woody Allen, and then let the Larry David just let the cast sort of improvise their way through the story they want to tell. And Digging for Fire is actually it was co-written or co-treatmentized by Jake Johnson, who both of them worked together on Drinking Buddies, which we both agree is one of Joe's best films.
Oh, without question,
not his best film.
Yeah,
yeah. And this was it stars Jake Johnson.
And what's it called again?
And Digging for Fire.
Digging for Fire.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Jake Johnson and Rosemary DeWitt play husband and wife. Who go away to a little vacation house, one of her clients. And as he's sort of poking around in the backyard, he discovers a human bone and a gun. So, and this is actually based on a real incident that happened to Jake Johnson.
Really?
Yes. He said it was based on a true story where he found a gun and a skeletal remain and then invited a bunch of his buddies over to sort of dig for, you know, what else might be, you know, hidden on the property. So this movie, so it's partly that as the wife goes away for the weekend with her child to her parents' house, it then sort of becomes, I kind of described it as Joe Swanberg's Hall Pass in a way, as the husband and wife on their own sort of separate journey trying to negotiate the sort of the pitfalls of marriage. As you know, Jake is, you know, digging, you know, through this property, trying to discover, you know, something, you know, just to do something, have something for himself and discover some mystery. And she's off trying to make her way back to the house, with temptations that befall her as well. It's a film that gets off a little bit of a rocky patch at the beginning, as everything is decided. But as the movie goes on and the movie sort of finds the voice on the story it's trying to tell, it turns into something really interesting. And it helps the fact that if you look at the cast list for this,
I'm looking at it right now. It's insane.
It is insane.
It's
and
crazy.
And a few of the people only have like one scene in the movie. People like Jenny Slate and Melanie Lynskey and Ron Livingston. And Anna Kendrick, for that matter, but there are also people like Brie Larson and Sam Rockwell, who have a little bigger parts in the film, and it's another nice piece of work. It really is.
Good, good. I'm glad he bounced back after that Happy Christmas movie, which I did not enjoy.
Yeah, I was not a fan of that one either. Yeah. But you know, you take the good with the bad, and this
true.
is one of the good
well,
ones.
That's the thing. When you make 15 movies a year, you know, you're bound to
right.
You're bound to knock a couple out of the park.
Exactly.
All right. What's
clearly working with Jake Johnson is a good thing.
Well, Jake Johnson rules. So that's, that's just that.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. What's next?
Okay. Back on the scene is Anna Fleck and Ryan Bowden. Or did I get that wrong? Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck.
Okay.
I think actually, they were the ones who did Half Nelson and Sugar.
Oh, yeah.
So many years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have a film here called Mississippi Grind, and it stars Ben Mendelsohn and Ryan Reynolds, and it's a gambling road trip buddy movie, if you will. Ben Mendelsohn sort of plays the guy that, you know, he's got a gambling problem. He thinks, you know, he can, you know, hit the big time. And Ryan Reynolds is sort of the more better looking, flamboyant, but more sort of casual gambler. And they're taking this road trip to New Orleans to get in this big poker game. But that's really just sort of the surface level of the film, because the film really is, you know, paints the sort of the portrait of a gambling addict and someone who has Mendelsohn plays and how his life is really kind of destroyed over the years, and where he's at now because of his belief that he can always hit the big jackpot, if you will, on all the, you know, various gambling games. And it's the best work I think that Ben Mendelsohn has done in his career. I mean, this is a guy that's done a lot of supporting performances, a lot of very good supporting performances. But this is really, it's his movie. Ryan Reynolds is more of the supporting role in this one. And Reynolds is really good too. This is a really strong piece of work from the two of them. It's a big bounce back after I had to be reminded that they did It's Kind of a Funny Story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so this is sort of a bounce back from that. It really has their voice, the voice that we remember from Half Nelson and Sugar. It's a really strong script. It's got moments of real heartbreak and pathos. It goes on a little bit too long, and I'm not sure I entirely buy what happens in the third act. But it's hardly enough to distract from the performances and just how good everything is leading up to those moments.
Great.
So Mississippi Grind.
That's great. All right, very, very cool. Mississippi Grind. And all right, what do we got next?
We got another documentary by another great documentarian, Kirby Dick, whose last film was The Invisible War, which is about basically the cover-ups of rape of women in the military.
Yep.
And this new film, The Hunting Ground, is basically the story of the cover-up of rapes on college campuses. You know, there's so much to say about it, but I think, you know, just the premise of it kind of says it all. Everything that he discovers in this movie and the way that the college campuses basically discourage women from reporting rape because then it, you know, brings their statistics up in ways that don't make them appetizing to potential new students. And it gets into the whole thing about student athletes and how many of them have been accused of rape and sexual assault over the years. It's as powerful a documentary as Kirby Dick has done, and just about all of his films with dealing with subject matter like this. He did Twist of Fate many years ago, which is an astounding documentary.
He also
Invisible
War is phenomenal. He also did Sick,
right,
which was a really amazing film and powerful, and gut-wrenching,
disturbing.
Really disturbing, but a tremendous film nonetheless. So.
Yeah, and this one, I mean, this one, the Radius and Weinstein already have it. I think CNN Films is also attached to it as well. So this is one we're going to get to see. And, you know, anyone who sort of followed the Jameis Winston stuff that's gone on in Florida State over the past football season.
Yeah.
Oh, man, did he bury him in this movie.
Okay.
It's really, again, another really striking, visceral piece of work that also focuses on the positives and young women who have formed these campaigns and have gone throughout the country coaxing other women out of their silence. So there's a bright light in this this tunnel of shame, and it's a must see material for especially anyone who ever has a daughter.
Okay.
Period.
All right. The Hunting Ground documentary. Okay. All right. What's next?
What's next on the list? The Overnight. Let's lighten things up a little bit. This is a comedy that stars Adam Scott and Taylor Schilling from Orange is the New Black. And they play a couple with a young son who move into a new neighborhood, some more of an affluent neighborhood. And they're befriended at the park one day by a new, you know, semi-neighbor played by Jason Schwartzman. And he invites them over for dinner, sort of a play date for their kids. And this movie takes place all in one night as we discover some of the quirky things that Jason Schwartzman and his French wife are involved with. And getting this sort of, you know, more milquetoast couple involved with. This is the funniest thing Schwartzman has done in years.
Okay.
He is hysterical in this movie, as you know, Adam Scott, you know, is terrific as always. It's really funny, and I'd say this movie sort of, I think, might have broken the record for the most prosthetic penises in a film. I won't say more than that, but so be warned. but done so in hilarious ways, and so this movie's only like 80 minutes. But it packs in more laughs than obviously most longer features than that. And that just got picked up by this new company called The Orchard.
Okay.
Who have only picked up one other movie called What We Do in the Shadows. That's actually also really funny as well. That's coming to, I think, VOD soon. But The Overnight got picked up, and that's definitely worth waiting for.
So Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah, Jason Schwartzman, baby. Just seriously, like everything he does in the movie gets a laugh.
Wow.
And the way I sort of described it on the way out, I described it as sort of a more, even though it's got a lot of sexual, you know, overtones to it, it's more sort of a more audience-friendly Eyes Wide Shut. If you will. So if that's entirely possible, I think this movie pulled it off.
All right, a more audience-friendly Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah,
that's an interesting way of putting it. I will say this: Eyes Wide Shut. The final scene of Eyes Wide Shut, I was on the floor laughing.
Yeah,
when I saw
final lines in history.
Oh my God! I was just—I remember I was sitting. I was sitting next to John Williams, who at that time Roy had retired, and at that time John Williams had taken over the Saturday morning show, and we were reviewing movies together on Saturday mornings. And he was sitting next to me during the screening of Eyes Wide Shut, and that final line, I busted out laughing. Like, I laughed out loud, and I thought it was hilarious. Yeah. The fact that that was the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. And Nicole Kidman had that killer line. I just was on the floor laughing, and he looked at me like I was insane.
He was like, well, he probably hated the movie, too.
He didn't like the movie. He hated the movie. But, yeah. But yeah. I mean, I love that movie. I think Eyes Wide Shut's a great film. But that last line in Eyes Wide Shut, oh, man, classic.
Yeah.
Classic. All right, we'll take another break here, Eric. Hang on.
Okay.
All right. Eric Childress is with us, and we're going to get a few more movies here. Previewing from Sundance Film Festival. We're going to get to see a lot of these. So far, so good. We'll hear more coming up right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. Hump day, Wednesday. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. You can also send your texts there. Check us out at facebook.com/NickDShow. Eric Childress, who reviews movies with us every Monday morning and also writes for eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com, is currently in Utah at the Sundance Film Festival. He goes every year and also goes to other film festivals and gives us exclusive reports and previews of movies that he's seen. And we get back again with Eric. All right, what's next, Eric?
Okay, a film that is bound to make audiences very uncomfortable.
Okay.
is a film called The Tribe. Basically the film is about a story about a new kid who goes to a boarding school, and sort of the bullies that he encounters and some of the illegal activity that is going on at the boarding school. Now, here's the thing. It's a boarding school for deaf kids.
Okay.
And the entire movie is in sign language with no subtitles.
No subtitles.
No subtitles.
Wow.
So the only sound in the movie is just the ambient noise you would normally hear, but obviously no one else in the film does. So the entire movie, not, unless you know sign language, you will not know the specifics of what they're saying. But the film keeps you going because the movie sort of is basically sort of a series of vignettes. All done is with a narrative structure, and you very much follow exactly what's going on in the film. But each individual vignette is done in a single take as well. So this movie has all these sort of things going on for it. And because these moments, these individual scenes take place in a single take, when it gets to some of the more queasy, uncomfortable moments later in the film, you know they're not going to look away from it. And so you have the choice to whether you're going to be involved for this entire ride or not.
Wow.
And I'm telling you that, it certainly made me uncomfortable. I was completely into the filmmaking is really top-notch. Whether or not you respond to the plotting and what this one kid is sort of forced to do throughout the course of this movie and where it ends up, I start telling people that it's like the director watched kids in Irreversible.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man. And, so that's the sort of the level we're talking about here. But it's a film I very much admire, as uncomfortable as it made me. And, don't say I didn't warn you.
Okay.
You venture out to see this thing, because you might end up hating it.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I liked it.
Okay. Has this gotten a release or is it going to get a release?
It's going to get released. It's Draft House Films. It's one of theirs. So okay. I imagine you'll probably see it on demand at some point.
Yeah.
But it's again, it's a very visual film. So if you can see it in the theater and want to take the challenge of seeing a movie that's done with where you might not know what exactly is being said, this is one to take a look at.
Okay. The Tribe. All right. Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Next.
Okay. Well, let's lighten things up a little bit. Two of your boys are involved in one movie.
Okay.
Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Directed by Eli Roth.
Well, I wouldn't say Eli Roth is my boy.
Okay. Okay. But Keanu's your boy.
Yes, he is.
Keanu's your boy. And they're working together. And Keanu Reeves, the movie is called Knock Knock.
Yeah.
And Keanu Reeves plays a husband and father of two young kids Really good guy who one night, his family has gone away for the weekend on a rainy night. Two beautiful women show up at his door, been dropped off by a cab, say they're being taken, they're dropped off at the wrong address. And he's sort of a chivalrous type, so he invites them in and dries them off and gets them tea. But things don't exactly go as planned, and they have other plans in store for him. To put it mildly, this is basically sort of Eli Ross version of Funny Games, just with two really hot ladies instead of boys.
Okay.
Yeah. And for the first half of the movie, the setup of this movie is really sort of nicely done. It's funny. Keanu sort of playing it just kind of spot on perfectly, the situation he's in. And then the second half is it sort of gets into the more Eli Roth-y type stuff. And this movie is probably, it's actually like sort of the least Eli Roth film he's actually made.
Yeah.
It's not the most, it's really not the most gory of films, compared to a lot of the other things that he's done. But clearly, there's an Eli Roth vibe to it. The second half is just not as interesting. It's really not as much fun. It's a bit obvious. You're almost sort of waiting because it's Eli Roth waiting for it to get a little crazier.
Yeah.
And it just never quite does. And, maybe that's not entirely his fault. He wanted to try something a bit new. But he doesn't quite have it in the script and the plotting. And like I said, I mean, the Funny Games comparisons are too easy to avoid. So it's kind of a near miss,
okay.
Maybe more than a near miss. But Keanu, I think you'll enjoy Keanu in it.
Yeah, well, I enjoy Keanu pretty much in everything. But I actually did see the trailer for this, and I was very I was very curious. The trailer's online, and I was very curious about it. So.
Well, that's been picked up by Lionsgate, so that'll be coming out at some point.
So Knock Knock with Keanu Reeves, directed by Eli Roth, a near miss. Okay, what's next?
Mm-hmm. Well, another one. This one is called Sleeping with Other People, and it stars Jason Sudeikis and Alison Brie.
Oh,
well,
wait a minute now.
You liking that?
Okay. Yeah.
basically playing Harry and Sally.
Oh, okay.
See, I took you down a notch there.
Yeah.
But most people like When Harry Met Sally. But this, I mean, again, the comparisons of this between the two movies are completely unavoidable. Almost as much as Groundhog Day is to Edge of Tomorrow, When Harry Met Sally is to this movie. But the two of them play people who meet during college. They lose their virginity together, and then some years later, end up meeting back in New York, their various troubled relationships, and form they become best friends. The plotting of the movie doesn't take you anywhere new. It really doesn't. Where it does sort of take you, though, is that Jason Sudeikis sort of proves himself to be a very capable leading man in this movie, which is kind of a step forward for him.
I got to tell you, that doesn't surprise me.
No, it doesn't.
Looking at the range of talent that guy has, I think Sudeikis is a really terrific performer.
Yeah, and he really goes somewhere with this because there are, the movie does have some really big laughs in it. There's a lot. I mean, Adam Scott is in this. There are a lot more people in the cast. But he does able to take places when the movie does sort of get to be a little bit more emotional. And those are the moments that actually kind of help sell the movie for me.
Mm-hmm.
The movie is kind of, up and down for like the first hour. And then when the movie started to really become a little more heartfelt, that's when the movie sort of made the jump into recommendation territory.
All right, cool.
It kind of has like three endings.
Okay.
I thought the movie was going to end like 20 minutes earlier, but that's okay because I actually like where it went. Alison Brie is just, oh my God.
Annie!
She's wonderful. Yeah,
it's
I know.
Annie! All right, Eric, as always, thanks, man. Have a safe trip home. And if people want to read your stuff, I know that you've been throwing some of your stuff up. I didn't take a look because I didn't want to ruin, I didn't want to see what you were saying. But I know you've been ranking some stuff on Letterboxd. You've been tweeting, and so everybody can follow you there. And then we'll get another a wrap-up report of the other two movies and some of the other ones that we haven't talked about on Monday morning. Cool?
Yeah, and I'm also doing some stuff for RogerEbert.com as well. So I did a preview piece that went up before the festival. That's available now.
Okay.
And I'll also be doing a few other movies that I've seen, and also some of the best performances of the festival.
Great, man. RogerEbert.com. Yeah. Check it out. Eric, always a pleasure, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Take care, man. We'll see you later. We'll talk to Eric on Monday morning for regular movie reviews, and he'll do a final wrap-up of the Sundance Film Festival, and we thank Eric for giving us that preview. All right, it's Nick DiGilio here, and it's 720 WGN.